Yakshamash, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. And it is game day. We are recording live on a Saturday morning. Hope you guys all are enjoying the somewhat warmer weather here in Wisconsin. I know it's supposed to get up around 85 today here in Madison alone. And I know that hopefully there's some good driving conditions for my partner in crime, my Polish prince on the phone. We have the Polish rifle, Scott Wisniewski. Scott, how's the driving through America's heartland?
So far, so good. I'm beyond the heartland now, though. I'm definitely in the south now. So I'm near Knoxville, Tennessee, and all I could get on the radio before we started the show was Tennessee Volunteers football coverage. So, it's underway.
They did have – the Vols did have that good come-from-behind win against Georgia Tech a couple of weeks ago. That was impressive considering Georgia Tech was seemingly dominating. What's up?
Here's an interesting tip I'll just give you from the coverage. They're playing Florida, and, you know, that's always a rivalry for them. Florida hasn't been shut out in over 300-plus games, and the Volunteers haven't been shut out in a 270 games. So if you're a betting man, don't bet on a shutout.
Yeah.
That's the best thing to tell you.
But, you know, and thank you guys all for listening. What we're going to do today, we'll play some audio from – I interviewed Leon Jacobs earlier this week on Tuesday. And so you'll hear from Leon Jacobs about the defense, about Andrew Van Ginkel, and what they're looking to do at outside linebacker. Obviously, we'll talk about the Brewers in a little bit. Big win against Miami. They are – technically on the road, but they're at home because of the effects of Hurricane Irma and what's happened there. And hopefully everyone is well after the hurricane. We'll also talk some Packers. Obviously, big Sunday night game in Atlanta. And be some primetime viewing there tomorrow evening. But, you know, let's start off because it's the most recent. You know, it's coming up today, 2:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, or Daylight Time, whatever you want to call it. ABC. Watch ESPN. You can also listen to it on the Badger Sports Radio Network with our friends, you know, Matt LePay, Mark Tosher, and Mike Lucas. It is the Wisconsin Badgers, number 10 in the AP poll, heading to Provo, Utah to take on the BYU Cougars in a game that, you know, on paper, Scotty, they look like they should win. But they haven't really put together a complete game yet through two games against kind of inferior competition, obviously. But they head out to Utah where their offensive line, the health is questionable at best with two of their starting guards. One is definitely out, the other one questionable. But they're also facing a BYU team that has an anemic offense. That's been the adjective to describe BYU's offense underneath Ty Detmer. But also, I mean, they have a stout front seven, but that offense underneath for BYU, I mean, that's they should come away with a win. But, you know, what are you thinking heading into Saturday's game?
Well, first of all, it seems to be a trend with state college football teams. Badgers have two banged-up guards. Packers have two banged-up tackles. The Badgers have sustained a lot of injuries early on. And we talked about this 6 weeks ago. The only thing that could stop the Badgers, I thought, were injuries. And they've had their fair share already. That said, I think they still win this game, but I think you're going to see moments again where they struggle in different facets of the game offensively, and it's not because they don't have the talent. Again, it's, you know, trying to figure out the right rotations and the injuries and things they've gone through. But they should win this game, but, you know, you've touched on it. We're waiting to see the complete game, right? We're waiting to see the Badgers come out and play 60 minutes of dominant football as they, you know, are literally on the cusp of the Big Ten season starting for them. So maybe this is the game they do it, but it's going to be tough with, you know, banged up offensive linemen. Again, they should still be able to score points, but I don't think you'll see them win by, you know, 28 points or anything like that just because of that. But I expect them to win, and I expected them to win by a little bit more last week, too. And, you know, I'm of the belief, and I say this all the time when we talk about the NFL, win's a win. It doesn't matter. You don't get style points. In college, though, you kind of do get style points. As you saw, the Badgers dropped one spot, even though they we're never in doubt of losing that game last week, but they still lost the spot in the poll. So you'd like to see them just get that one where they just throttle somebody and kick their butts up and down the field for 60 minutes. I just don't know that that's going to happen today.
Right. I mean, I think you hit it on the head, and it's one thing that, you know, they're talking, and yeah, the wins, I mean, they're comfortable wins for Wisconsin, obviously, with Utah State after overcoming that 10-point difference and then scoring, obviously, the 59 unanswered points in week one, and then now you're heading into, you know, with Florida Atlantic, and Florida Atlantic played their tails off, and they took advantage of the miscommunication in the secondary where both Dakota Dixon and Nick Nelson thought they were having the same coverage, but then that left DeAndre McNeil open for that 63-yard touchdown. I really, you know, like you said, injuries, you know, the Dietzen just has been banged up. The left guard, John Dietzen, starting left guard, has been banged up seemingly throughout, you know, his career where, you know, he's dealt with those injuries. And he was out for the spring with an ankle, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So this is a team that, you know, you're looking at Micah Kapoy, who thankfully they have experience there where Micah Kapoy, you know, I talked to him earlier in fall camp. He looked better. He, you know, Joe Rudolph really applauded just the conditioning that he was in this year. And he's played well. I think the bigger question, if he goes in at left guard, that's fine. Benchwall is the bigger question. If he can't go, which he's practiced all week, or at least has received reps, according to the coaching staff, that means that it sounds like he's doing the work necessary to be in the game plan and then make the, you know, his way, you know, hopefully into some playing time. But if not, you're looking at, you know, Jason Erdman, possibly a walk-on, who, you know, he got first team reps at left guard when Dietzen was dinged up during the fall camp along with Kapoy. So that says something there. And Chris mentioned on Thursday that he has trust in him and there's confidence in Erdman and some of his natural abilities. I think he mentioned his strength and whatnot. So we'll see. I mean, that played a big part against BYU. And I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's something where this team really, I think the defense is going to have to take over, and it's more of a pro-style system, so we'll see how they'd fare against a team that likes to run the ball, and also, you know, we'll see what Bo Hodge, you know, who's Merrill Hodge's son, we'll see. I mean, it sounds like he's going to get the start over Tanner Mangum, even though BYU's not commenting on it. You know, that's their policy, apparently, but, the point spread is, was it like 16.5, 17.5 right now? And talking with our friends with ESPN Madison yesterday, I told them, you can't, you know, I'm saying 27-13 right now. I think there's still some things to work out. I think injuries, you know, it's not going to be at the 357-yard effort against the Cougars as it was against the Owls on the ground. So I think it's going to be close. I think Wisconsin should win comfortably, but you know, like I said, style points, I'm not sure, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same ballpark. I was thinking like 27-10, so I actually had them covering the spread, I guess. But yeah, to that point, you know, this is the struggles on offense will continue. I don't think the other thing is I don't think they're long term. I think that they'll figure this out. I think that, you know, you'll see the offense start doing some things that they're capable of doing. I just, you know. You're right. It ended up going on the road. And, you know, BYU kind of been a tough place to play for many teams, in the past. So we'll see. But what other than the injuries and seeing if the offense can get started, defensively, other than a few big plays, I haven't been overly concerned about the defense. You know, but what other than the injured players and some of the other things, well, do you think is the biggest X factor in the game, and what will you be looking for? Because I know when you watch the game, it's not just watching what's going on with the scoring plays. You're kind of keeping your eye on different things. What's one of the things you're going to be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at with when it comes to this game in particular. I mean, I think defensive communication, you know, is a big key. When it looks at, you know, we talked about the 63-yard touchdown they gave up. That was because, you know, basically both Dixon and Nick Nelson, the Hawaii transfer, thought they were covering, it looked like short, like it was more a zone when it should have been. It wasn't relayed properly to Nelson that it's, he had man coverage on McNeil, and that play just probably doesn't happen. And we're probably not talking about the alignment issues and whatnot, but that's what pace-based offense does. I want to see what they do against BYU, their communication, and adjusting to Bo Hodge, Merrill Hodge, yeah, Bo Hodge, and so. I think that's the big thing I'm looking for is, even like from the press box last week, you could see that, Florida Atlantic could have had a big play on a 3rd and 4 early on, like second series of the game, because they only had one defensive back over to a side where they had two wide receivers. But, Daniel Parr, the quarterback for the Owls, just he hesitated and or grabbed the sack. So, I think I want to see how the defense cleans up more. And like I said, I'm not concerned because they only gave up 250 yards last week. They gave up over 300 against Utah State. But, they've looked solid. They have the tools in place, even without the T.J. Watt and the Vince Beagle, in my opinion, that they have production available and the players to step in and to be a top-five defense. I'm just interested in seeing – I mean, and it's hard to replace guys like Beagle and Watt, and also Sitchie, Jack Sitchie, for that matter, right? Because he was the energy to the defense, as Vince Beagle mentioned last year. So I think and Jim Leonard's looking for more. He said he wants more of the leaders on the defense to stand up when he talked this week during coach availability. So I'm intrigued to see how the defense lines up. Offensively, I want to see the passing game. I want to see Alex Hornibrook step up along with the receivers, because another theme was the simple fact that Paul Christ and Joe Rudolph talked about player, the quarterback and his receivers helping each other. If the ball's a little underthrown, the receiver comes back and attacks it to try to make the catch. You saw that with Danny Davis in the first game against the Aggies. But prime examples, drops. You can't have Troy Fumagalli dropping a 3rd and 9 in the third quarter when Hornibrook puts it in his breadbasket. You can't have A.J. Taylor dropping balls like he did against Utah State. So it's a thing where you're on the road, though. If you have turnovers, sloppy play in terms of drops or stupid procedural penalties, that's what I'll be watching. Like, is this team going to be able to overcome some of those early mistakes? And this is a good team. It's still a top 10 team, and they have, like you said, the explosiveness. I'm not worried. It's more just cleaning it up, because they have a bye week next week, but then they head into Big Ten play, and even though Northwestern got their butts handed to them by Duke, it really, you're still wondering, it's Big Ten play, it's a whole new season, basically wipe your slate clean, and you go out and attack for the division crown. They go Northwestern and Nebraska the first 2 weeks of the Big Ten season, so you want more of a complete effort this week heading into the bye, and then hopefully, I'm not sure how much momentum works in the bye week, but you want to see some signs that things are coming together before they see Northwestern at Camp Randall on September 30th.
Yeah, I think that you hit it right on the head. You want to, and that's why I said this might be, you might see some signs of that. But you did say talking about the defense and calling out, coaches calling out some of the players. But if you take away the 63-yard touchdown, the one pass, they only gave up. They gave up less than 200 yards. So so I think you're right. I think the defense is less of a concern, minus a few communication breakdowns that we've seen early on. But it is going to be interesting to see what the offense is able to do as it builds momentum. And Northwestern, as bad as they've looked, and by the way, speaking of bad, I got to listen to the Illinois game yesterday because I was driving through Illinois, Indiana during it. Oh, God, terrible. But anyway, but Northwestern's been always one of those teams that plays the Badgers hard no matter what, where they are in their program the last decade and a half, So, again, you'd like to, kind of shake off some of those question marks and the doldrums and see what they're able to do. But like I said, I think they win this game today. I think the defense is the catalyst. I think the offense is still going to have a few moments where, you kind of scratch your head a little bit and ask yourself what is this team's offensive potential and when will they reach it? And again, they will at some point this year. I don't think it's
going to
be today.
Right. And then, right now we'll skip some other of the talk with the Big Ten. We'll get to a quick conversation. I'll pop this in Leon Jacobs, outside linebacker. It's a good 4 to 5 minute conversation with the senior and talking about the outside linebackers here on the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. We're here with Leon Jacobs, and you know, heading into third week. How are you guys feeling? About ready to head out to Provo?
Feel pretty good. Today was the first day of install. I thought we did pretty well. They look kind of like our offense pro style, so should be what we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, how are you guys preparing? Because I know maybe they maybe went a little bit more pace-based against Portland State in their first game against an FCS opponent, but then, you know, you've been watching some of the games against LSU and then last week against Utah. Are you seeing more pro style? And what are you seeing out of that offense altogether?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of pro style. I think in the LSU game, they're like kind of running a lot of 2 minutes since they were behind. So we're just taking stuff, little stuff from that in the Utah game. Yeah.
When it comes to the progression for this linebacker group, and you know, through two games, you have you know, three of the team's six sacks, and then also like 8.5 of the 18 tackles for loss between you and Garrett, and also Andrew. Like, what have you seen out of your group, your position group, so far when rewatching the tape from last week, and then you know the week before?
I think effort. You know, we're always going 100 miles per hour, just trying to make plays. We know what our assignment is. I think that's just half the job, because Coach Hughes does a good job of putting us in position to make plays. If you just know what you're doing, then you can make them.
When it comes to Andrew's progression, and obviously you know, coming here first time, you know, in this winter, spring, like, how have you seen him progress from you know the spring up until you know last week now or today in practice, in terms of his progression to be a you know contributor to the defense?
Yeah, I was just telling Jesse, I think the biggest thing with him is his aggressiveness and physicality. I think that's improved the most from him. He's always been shifting and stuff, and he's always been a smart player, but I think he's gotten way more physical in the spring. That's helped him.
When did you see that the physical, that it was really kind of take shape and get more comfortable?
Yeah, fall camp, because in the spring he was hurt a little bit, and then he came back. And then fall camp, I think, as he got more comfortable with the playbook and stuff, yeah, I saw him shedding blocks, putting people on the ground, and then he did it a couple times in Utah State and in the last game. So.
With Andrew, too, is there a point where you saw out from the outside that he felt more comfortable with the defense, and then maybe when you get more comfortable, that's when you know you start making those plays?
Yeah, he really shined our last scrimmage. That's the one, the same scrimmage that Jonathan Taylor shined in.
Yeah,
I think he had like three TFLs in that. So I think from since then, he's you know done a good job.
Well, for the group and for yourself, like, how are you guys feeling? You know, in terms of just wanting to improve, like, where are there certain key areas that you guys are keying in at? Maybe just not just for BYU, but down the road.
Yeah, pass rush, better job of transitioning from run to pass. Obviously, you can always make more plays, miss tackles, want to limit that. So, yeah.
Welcome back, everyone, to Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Make sure you guys check out Bucky's Fifth Quarter for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, and more. And if you guys take a look, thanks again to Leon Jacobs for speaking with us earlier. That was from Tuesday. And the big thing, make sure you guys check out, we have our How to Watch post up on Bucky's Fifth Quarter, plus my features on Andrew Van Ginkle, one of the outside linebackers that's in the rotation with Garrett Dooley and Leon Jacobs. And then also Adam Bay, because, you know, specialists are people too. We talk about the true freshman's adjustments to the college game. First year player, and talk about how he was backed up in his first career punt, or his punt for a long snap there, and how he adjusted from there on in. So make sure you guys check that out. We'll have also coming up probably in the next next hour or two, we'll have some how the future Badgers fared with the class of 2018. We're putting a report up there with some interesting highlights from the prep game. So, but on that note, we go from college over to football. And Scotty, I mean, it seemed like, you know, I know the score wasn't that bit large, but, you know, it's Packers. I mean, in my opinion, I mean, Seattle couldn't get anything done. Russ Wilson and company could not, you know, really move the ball. I mean, you know, and Packers come away. To me, it's the first game of the year, and they have some injuries, like you called out earlier, on the offensive line, especially at tackle, with Bakhtiari and Bulaga questionable. But it was an impressive victory against Seattle on Sunday.
No, without a doubt. And the thing is, it's just one game, and you know, it was a really bad day for former Badger quarterback, but last week. But here's the thing. I don't know what to make of it, because the defense looked so much improved from the defense that we saw really the last 4 years, crying out loud. I mean, they looked really good. We're going to find out how good they really are, though, because Atlanta's a different animal at home. Atlanta struggled a little bit against the Bears, but they're a team that on turf, that's what they're built for. They're fast. They can do some things to the Packers secondary last year. So I'm interested to see what the defense is able to do against Atlanta, because the defense, quite frankly, might have to do make some huge plays in this game because the tackles are banged up. They both may not play. That's going to make it tougher to protect Aaron Rodgers. We'll see if that means they won't be able to get the run game going. Atlanta's defense is a little underrated as far as I'm concerned. And the defense is going to have to do some things, be it putting pressure like we saw last week. What a game for Mike Daniels. I mean, will it be somebody in the secondary continuing to step up? Will Kenny King continue to improve? Because, he had a couple plays last week where he was fine and a couple plays not so much. But, again, he's a rookie for, real NFL game. But I think Atlanta wins this game, and I think part of the reason is because even if Bakhtiari and Bulaga play, they're going to be banged up. They're not going to be 100%. So, we'll find out what they're able to do against Atlanta. I still think the Packers are a team that can win 13 games this year, and I still think they're a Super Bowl contender, even if they lose at home as Atlanta opens their new stadium, which is always a tough environment. By the way, Atlanta, I don't know if you've heard this story, but we may have covered it back in the summertime. So one of their concession partners is Chick-fil-A.
Yes, absolutely. And
they have a stand, a Chick-fil-A restaurant in the new stadium, but it's not open on Sundays.
I don't understand that, but I would love. I mean, I know Aaron Rodgers talked about wanting to have it open and lamenting that earlier this week. I mean, if we do go off on a quick tangent, by the way, and our friend Tony Cartagena from ESPN has had his, like, what's your top five restaurants? Mine obviously is like Culver's, and then like a close second is Chick-fil-A, with Culver's beaten out just because of the variety of ice cream and then having butter burgers. But I mean, those are my one and two. And so not having your Chick-fil-A open on game day, I think it's disappointing. I understand the company's stance of giving people the day off on Sunday for the day of rest. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, if you're going to have it open, like, if you're going to be at the stadium, where do most of the, that game, that's exclusively for the Falcons, correct? So are you going to drive to the stadium just to go to Chick-fil-A on an off day on a Tuesday?
Because there's hundreds of Chick-fil-A's in the greater Atlanta area already. So why would you go out of your way to go to the football stadium to eat at that Chick-fil-A? It doesn't make sense. Unlike the Brewers at Miller Park, where they have a TGI Fridays, there's only a couple of those in town. It's a unique experience, and it's open on game days. In Atlanta, again, there's so many Chick-fil-A's. If you can't eat there on game days, why would you go out of your way to eat there on a regular random weekday? It's just silly. And if it was done just from an advertising standpoint, then put up a bunch of signs or buy the naming rights or something. I mean, there's something you could have done that would have made a little bit more sense.
Exactly. So, no, it is a interesting to say the least, but it does make me crave Chick-fil-A. By the way, question, Chick-fil-A, better breakfast or better lunch?
I think breakfast. Look, I like Chick-fil-A. I think it's okay. I used to make it an appointment stop when I would come down south, but I don't find myself going out of my way for the Chick-fil-A's now that they're open in Wisconsin. They're fine. I like their breakfast. Here's the thing. I'm always going to default to breakfast. I'm not a huge breakfast guy in general. Like, so, for example, McDonald's has the all-day breakfast, and it really angers me because they don't have all-day regular menu. And I'm like, some people want sausage McMuffin at 5 p.m. And some people want a Big Mac at 5 a.m. Why can't you accommodate both? But anyway, I like restaurants that do different options for breakfast. Chick-fil-A, obviously, with chicken. Wendy's has some interesting breakfast options, because otherwise you just get sick of the McMuffin and the biscuits. I get it. Okay, yeah, sausage biscuits. Okay, wonderful. So I'd say breakfast, just because there's some uniqueness to their offering.
Exactly. So yeah, no, it's I have to say breakfast for Chick-fil-A, just because as much as I enjoy the chicken sandwich, and we, you know, my day career, we cater out with Chick-fil-A during certain times, and people love it. I still think the breakfast, like, if I were on a road trip, like, I absolutely, like, that's the one time my family and I, like, splurge if we're going down to visit the family, like, a couple hours away. That's the one time, you know, we leave in the morning, we go and splurge, where, you know, go grab some, get their chicken biscuit, their tater tots. Like, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. And, I mean, honestly, during the summer, too, their peach milkshake is delightful. So, I mean, that's the one. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they don't have it anymore, but yeah, whenever they have it, it's a lock for me on my menu. So, back to the game.
Well, let me ask you this about the Packer game from last week. Did you feel, I mean, I know there's a rivalry with the Packers and the Seahawks, so there was already a tension and whatnot. And as much as I can't stand Pete Carroll, I'm glad some of those calls went against him. I love it. But anyway, honestly, he's probably the guy I dislike the most in all of pro football. But did you feel that there was maybe a different sense of, and I don't know what to attribute it to, but it seems like a more aggressive Packers, and I don't mean like aggressive, like, you know, running up the score. I mean like more physical. You're hitting a little harder than we're used to seeing. You're hitting back more than we're used to seeing. And maybe it's just one game. Maybe it was just a few plays. That was kind of the overall impression I got. I don't know if you took that away from it as well.
I feel like I tend to agree with you on that. I think, and maybe it's just the way that the sense of urgency with this team. You know, maybe they realize what's at stake and they needed to set the tone right. And obviously I think it also attributes to the fact of the bad blood between the teams a little bit. Like, you know, and obviously, I didn't see a punch thrown for that Seattle cornerback, but, you know, he did have his forearm on, was it Davante Adams' throat? So, you know, so that's, I mean, you know, whether or not that's a kick out or not, I'm not sure, but, I mean, apparently that's what the ref saw and they booted him. But, you know, you've seen, and obviously it's never going to take back the NFC Championship game loss, but even in a lot of the rosters turned over. But I think the history of Seattle and Green Bay, maybe, you know, they wanted to prove a point early on, and maybe they realized Eddie Lacy wanted to have a chip on his shoulder, and he didn't do much in that game at all. You know, so maybe they realized they tried to stand up to that. And also, I mean, you know, the players that are on this team, you know, the physicality you mentioned, you know, Martellus Bennett, you know, after a first down, you know, player shove, you know, hits Rodgers, he pushes back. There's maybe that little bit more of that attitude that, you know, Mike Daniels has been talking about. You know, him and Bakhtiari, granted it was a friendly rivalry, but they had the title belt during training camp where, you know, who's going to outdo the other in terms of the offensive and defensive lines. You know, Mike Daniels has talked about it on social media about how he, you know, the team, you know, the physicality, the mindset has changed. So I think maybe it's coming to fruition now. If they can get past the injuries, especially, you know, wasn't Daniels questionable along with Bakhtiari and Bryce? And Bulaga, too, with it sounds like the flu. I mean, it's looking like this team, you know, like has that physical element, maybe that edge. And it's only through one game. They could get blown up against Atlanta tomorrow night, and then you and I are back to square one, wondering, you know, well, the secondary is not what it was and whatnot, among other topics. But, you know, I think coming out of the gates, they looked really solid. I mean, I think they looked solid. And, yeah, I think there was a little bit more of an emphasis, you know, and they left a mark against the Seahawks.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. By the way, you know, I think there's a lot that's said about the Packer injury problem from year to year, but I did some research, and I found that they only have real injury issues in years that start with 2-0. So, you know, so that otherwise, you know, on all other years, they seem to be fine. I mean, I'll tell you what, it's like, you know, it's like the birds flying south for the winter. The Packers are going to have a boatload of injuries. They managed to navigate some of those troubled waters, and I suppose as long as it's not key players, especially Aaron Rodgers, they've managed to figure it out. But, man, and I know that you know, maybe it feels like there's more injuries because, again, we're in the trenches. You know, we're essentially hammered with Packer coverage. sun up and sun down. So maybe if we lived in some other city, we'd find that the injuries are just as prevalent there, but it just seems like a lot of attack. So, but what do you think tomorrow? I think Atlanta wins the game. I think it's, potentially they lose by 10. And again, it doesn't mean that I don't think they're a good team. I mean, we've had this discussion over the 5 years we've been doing this, where sometimes I pick the Packers to lose and people get mad and go, you don't think the Packers are good? But no, I just don't like the matchup. I don't like the environment. I don't like the injuries at tackle. I think if this game were at Lambeau and one of the two tackles were completely healthy, be it Gulak or Bakhtiari, I think the Packers beat them. But in Atlanta, opening a new stadium, celebrating their NFC championship from the year before, the crowd's going to be intense. I just think Atlanta wins.
I think so, too. I'm wondering... With the, I think Atlanta wins. I'm thinking maybe like a 28-21 or 28-24 game. I'm just wondering. And obviously it's the grand stadium where, they're opening and, Atlanta squeaked by the Bears, who obviously they're on the road for the first game of the year and whatnot.
On the road, outside, they're a little bit. I mean, last year they won a lot of road games, and that's why they, but by and large, that team's designed to play on turf. I mean, and good general managers, they build their team based on factors like their stadium, weather, their quarterback, So Atlanta's done a good job building that team around A, Matt Ryan, and B, their facility, as far as struggling up, week one is always a crapshoot. I think the only thing we can tell that's a trend, because there's only been one game played in week two, is Cincinnati's offense is terrible. Week one, they were bad. Week two, they cemented how bad they were. So
they fired their offensive coordinator yesterday. So, can I say, though, like, I feel like you let go of your starting left tackle. You let go of Kevin Zeitler, who goes to the Browns. You let go of most of your offensive line. Dalton doesn't have any – I'm not a Andy Dalton fan by any stretch of the imagination. Let me just get that out of the way. But they're not helping him by any chance by giving away all their offensive line and then dealing with the fact that their replacements aren't up to the par of what they had. The offensive weapons that have gone on to different places, you may have A.J. Green, but, they haven't helped that offense whatsoever.
No, they haven't. And I don't understand how Marvin Lewis continues to keep his job. Let me give you some background on that, because I'm not usually a guy who's calling for coaches to be fired. I'm just saying this. He's been there 15 seasons, okay? And there's two things that have been consistent in his 15 years. His players are undisciplined. Dante Perfect is a perfect example. Perfect is perfect of an example when it comes to that, right? Two, he's not won a playoff game in 15 years. Can you think of any situation in this day and age of the NFL? In the past, when there was more loyalty to coaches and longer rebuilding, things of that, that's one thing. But can you think of any other situation in this NFL that we currently absorb and consume where somebody could be with a team for 15 years and not win a playoff game and still have a job?
Right. No, it's definitely interesting, to say the least. And I hope, for the sake of, you see what Alex Erickson's doing down there, who had a big game return-wise, had a big game receiving-wise, for that matter, against the Texans on Thursday night. You hope that that for his sake, and Soldier and Shelton, the former Badger too, down in Cincy, who's on the practice squad right now. Yeah, you just hope that that turns around for their sake. But yeah, it's not a good predicament they're in.
Not at all. Not at all. So we'll see. But that's all we can. My point to that was that's all we can say about things carrying over from week one, because we only have a small sample size. We've only seen one game. I'm interested to see. Is Jacksonville's defense as good as this one? I'm going to actually see them live and live in color. So we'll find that out. I'll be at the game against Tennessee tomorrow.
Nice.
So that's a question. What's going to happen with the Colts without Andrew Luck? Even if Andrew Luck's there, are they good enough for it to matter? Or are they just terrible? And maybe does that mean Andrew Luck, they don't even bring him back this year and let him heal? I mean, they looked terrible against the Rams. And, yeah, Povine didn't look good, but neither did the Colts defense against the Rams. Now, granted, there are some short fields because of some turnovers, but it's still the Rams, and they put up a ton of points. So are the Colts one of the worst teams in football? The Jets, everybody says, is terrible. How are the Raiders for real? Well, I mean, so those are things now as you start to roll into 2, 3, 4 weeks that you start to see the storylines evolve. I'm interested to see how those evolve.
Exactly. So, and we'll come back next week with more from the Packers and obviously the Badgers. Real quick though, let's talk some Brewers before we have to take it home and you get back on the road safe and sound, brother. They come back now and big inning, 10-2 win. Neil Walker's grand slam was epic. And watching that game, you have 23,000 or however many, 19,000 people, however many it was yesterday, and they just. Yeah, it sounds like, 40,000 people, right? So, I mean, that was a huge win for there. It kept pace because the Cubs beat the Cardinals, Rockies won. And so they are now on, they're still in the hunt and obviously now in sole possession of second place in the NL Central. But I don't know, man. Well, like it's interesting.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, they got a little bit of a gift on other people's misfortune. And what I mean by that is the Hurricane, Miami, they had to move the game to Milwaukee. Brewers, they take advantage of this. They need to sweep the series because they're getting a gift, okay? Because you mentioned it, Cubs won again. The Rockies were on the ropes a week ago, but they seem to right the ship now, right?
Right.
So that's great. I'm still concerned about this spring training feel of 40% of their rotation now. You know, Anderson, Davies and Woodruff are in the starting rotation. But because the Brewers didn't make the trade that we said they should have made, there are a couple options. It wasn't just a Sonny Gray trade. We're not going to go back and beat that dead horse. But now, because Garza's been terrible and Jimmy Nelson's hurt, 2 out of every 5 starts, they're going with this 3 innings, 2 innings, the spring training feel. And what they're going to do is they're going to end up wearing out that bullpen. Now, I know that the answer is, from Greg Gausman, this is a means to an end. This is what we have to do because for whatever reason, they didn't want to make Josh Hader a starter when they called him up, whatever. Again, water under the bridge, right? But if they are able to get into the postseason, they're going to have to really hope that Anderson and Davies can go deep in the games because you're going to have a pretty beat-up bullpen. But again, none of that matters if they don't get there, right? So you got to do what you got to do to get there, and then you worry about the other things later, and that is the right strategy. I just wish that Stearns had addressed the situation even before Nelson got hurt. They needed a guy. We knew that. They needed a guy before Nelson got hurt. Then Nelson got hurt. Now they need 2 guys. So anyway, it's still been fun, and I didn't see the game because I was driving, and I listened to most of it, and I kept, and lost signal as I was in Indiana right before the beginning. But I could only imagine, although the crowd was bigger when it happened a few years ago, that the Grand Slam, did it remind you of the Ryan Braun Grand Slam in their last playoff season?
Yeah, it's sort of, but I mean, they're already up, I think, is the big thing. They're already up, and that, and then it turned into the bigger Grand Slam. So, I mean, the place exploded. Like, and Brian Anderson even said on Twitter that it was, one of those moments from this season that he won't forget. But you still, in my opinion, it's not the Brown. I mean, there was so much behind that Brown one where, it sent him to the postseason for the first time, in decades. It was the... There was a lot of bent up emotion, I think, with that one. The Walker one, what makes this impressive, I think, is a simple fact that this team was supposed to maybe win 70, 75 games, and that was it, if they're lucky. So, I mean, and with the lowest
payroll
in baseball.
I didn't have them winning that, to be honest. I had them winning 71, 50. So, you're right, and it's been a great story. I'm pointing my finger at Stearns, and I like what he's done with the rebuild, and I'm not suggesting that he's the wrong guy for the job, but you still have to take advantage of windows. The Neil Walker trade was great. It should have happened 3 weeks earlier. and they were scuffling at that position and just bleeding out at that position, whether it be VR or Stogard, who had cooled off by that time. Just terrible that they waited that long. You know, they didn't adjust the rotation. We talked about that, you know. But it still has been fun, and it still is nice to, and you hope, you just, it makes you hope more and more and more that their belief in the system and the players, they didn't want to give up to get pitching, even though they have this wealth of talent in the outfield and in the middle infield, that it pays off, man. Because if it doesn't, you hate to think they missed their window. You know what I mean? So we'll see. But it still hasn't taken away the fact that it's fun. We can still be critical about, or I can at least still be critical about things and things I would like to see different. But I certainly didn't expect any of this. The other thing I threw out there, and again, hindsight's always 20/20, right? But Feliz was terrible, if you recall, at the beginning of the year. And I had asked that they remove him like 2 weeks before they finally did. And in those 2 weeks, he blew three games. If they would have made the switch then when people were talking about it, they'd be, you know, up in the wild card. Again, hindsight being what it is, but just missteps in a long season, you can find, because baseball's so long and arduous and grueling, you can always find moments to point to. And I think that's one, if they don't make it and they lose this thing by a game or two, and like, boy, if you would have only made that switch at closer a little bit earlier, you know, if you would have only made the trade clock a little bit earlier. Those are things that you'll question as a fan, especially someone like me, who's just passionate dissector of baseball and the Brewers being the team I've been, you know, have been closest to my heart forever and ever and ever, and they've broken my heart so many times. Obviously, you're going to see why there's passion and thoughts and sometimes angst, even when things have gone well, like they have to. So.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of second guessing. I mean, part of me still feel. I mean, if they make the playoffs, that's. I mean, Craig Counsell should get manager of the year, hands down. I mean, I know what. Dodgers have slipped a bit, all that stuff. But you take a team that was going to win maybe 70, like I said, 70, 75 games, and now with where they are in the standings and with games to play, they've surpassed that. They have a great shot at the very least to hit 500, going until the end of the year. But I mean, they're. In the thick of it for the NL Central, even though I think the Cubs will still pull it out. But, you know, the wild card, they're still, you know, in it as well. It's a testament to just what they've done, you know, as an organization. And the thing is, though, like next year, I can guarantee you that, you know, there's going to be greater emphasis. There's going to be a lot more expectations with the crew. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason to supplement the roster, which is rich with talent. But they have obviously areas to address.
Well, and we'll see about that. I mean, Carlson gets some consideration. I think whether they make the playoffs or not, I think that matchup should. I mean, Arizona's been amazing this year. And again, they weren't supposed to be as good as they were. And Carlson still is with the juggling of the lineups and the pitch. You know, it is what he is. I'll tell you what, I still believe when they're ready to contend. Like, really be, when they think they're major contenders, because they're contending now, but when a team thinks they're major contenders, it's going to be a situation like without the Cubs, where they're going to bring in a different manager, a different style. I think Council's great for what they're trying to do. The expectations were low. But guess what? After this year, you know the expectations are going to be higher next year. The bar is going to be set higher. So now there's a little bit more pressure. Because let's be honest, coming into the season, how much pressure did Craig Council have? How much was on his shoulders for this team to do well, you know? So we'll see now next year when, again, people are going to be, hey, let's take the next step. If you win 84 games this year, you should win 90 next year, right? I mean, I know that that's not how it works. I'm just saying as far as expectations and what the fans are going to expect, we'll see.
Right. I'm with you there. So it is very – I mean, expectations will be strong next year. But, you know, we'll see what they do. And Stearns is a smart man. There's depth at key positions. So I guess we'll just see. And, I mean, like I said, we still got plenty to talk about this year, depending upon what happens. And plenty of NL Central matchups that will decide who plays in October. So before we let you go, before we get you back on the road, brother, anything else that you want to pop in real quick before we take it home?
No, no, that covers it. I'm looking forward to, I won't get to watch the Badger game. I will watch the Packers game because it's a night game, so I'll be back from the Jacksonville Jaguars game in time for that. I can't wait. I'm hoping for a clean sweep. Brewers win all three, Packers win, Badgers win. I think it's all possible. I think the Packers have the toughest road to hope. So we'll find out. We'll find all that out in the next 36 hours.
On that note, guys, we'll check back in with you next week. And just like I said, enjoy the weekend, enjoy the weather. We're here in Wisconsin before it gets, I think tonight's supposed to rain, but whatever. But enjoy the weekend, enjoy just enjoying your Sunday for a little bit before the game. Put the kids to bed and enjoy some Sunday night football with the Packers and Falcons. And then obviously, stay tuned with us next week. We'll recap the Badgers' outcome, what lies in store for them for the bye week, and what needs to be done, along with, like I said, recaps of the Packers. We talk some, obviously, more Brewers and anything else that piques our fancy. So, guys, have a great weekend. Scotty, safe travels, brother. For the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, this is Jay Kokorowski. Tune in next week to another edition of the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza.